You're listening to Across the Park with Joel Kassam, Gabby Morris, and Mick Rad. Hello and welcome to Across the Park, a very multi-award-winning sports show. I'm Joel Kassam, and joining me this week to discuss all things that we're just going to be discussing, it's Gabby Morris.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Gab.
Good evening.
Good
Happy
evening.
Happy Friday.
Let's just quickly say Mick isn't here again. Is in the country, has been away for two to three weeks.
Yeah, and so he went AWOL.
Yep.
Absent without leave. Mm-hmm. He's now fired.
He's gone. Yeah.
But that's fine. We don't need him. We've done great without him so far.
Last week was a bit...
It was fine. It was great.
Guys, we ran out of things to talk about.
Yeah, we did. We actually did, which is a surprise.
So.
But we're good now.
We are, yes. And taking his spot, joining us for the very first time, is sports activist, former CEO of Skin Sportswear, and chair of the Australian-based Sports Technology Lab, EO, it's Jamie Fuller.
I'm just overjoyed with the round of applause by all those people sitting out there in the good seats.
Isn't that exciting? Yes, this is a ticketed event at Across the Park. If you don't know, you can buy tickets online.
I counted 140.
Yes,
so far.
You've drawn a crowd, Jamie. Yeah, very great. Exciting.
Yeah, normally there's no one, so this is nice.
Yeah, this is big. This is big.
Appreciate
for us. We'll have to try and make sure they're quiet, though, please, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and thems. That's it. Very exciting to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure, Gabby. Love to be here.
Wow, you've got a lot of hats. You've done a lot.
Got a fat head.
I don't know. It looks all right.
I got a massive head. My head is huge.
Do you?
Yeah. It's a Kassam head. All the Kassams. All my dad's side of the family.
Big head.
Big-headed.
Don't look
Anyway, we're not talking about we could do a whole
it's
show
dangerous.
On this. Jamie, whenever guests come in, the first thing we like to ask them is their sporting credentials. What did you do? Did you play any sports growing up? Do you still like to play anything now?
Did you get any great awards?
Yeah, I did actually. But if I've got a little bio, and if you read my bio, it says that my sporting abilities are inversely proportional to my passion for sport.
Okay.
And that's really what's driven my passion for sport is I went to a school on the North Shore of Sydney. And I played in the D's in rugby. And so we were pretty disastrous, but God, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, and so that sort of drove it. The one award that I have got is I captained the second 11 in cricket.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
And we were undefeated. We were the second.
You're second. Is it like great cricket or?
Grade.
No, school cricket.
School cricket.
Yeah. Okay. So you got the first 11, then the second 11.
Okay. Yep.
And I was shit at that. I'm sorry. I was rubbish at that.
Don't you worry.
Okay, cool. I was shit at that too.
So did you get most enthusiastic awards ever? Is that the kind of...
No,
or?
We were undefeated. The second 11 was undefeated.
Yeah,
and so, I got my school prize for being undefeated.
Well, then, being undefeated, you obviously went all the way through and won the final. Did you get to hold a little trophy up? Or?
No. Yeah, sort of, in the school's context.
Yeah.
But there wasn't really a massive championship for,
okay.
for the second 11. The first 11 got all the lollies, but I never played at the better level. But it didn't matter, you know. We were still good and crap, and had a lot of fun.
It's all about fun. What was your were you batter bowler?
I was a wicket keeper.
Okay,
yeah. Loved being in the middle of it constantly, and love my rugby as well.
Yeah. What about where were you playing in rugby?
I played everywhere.
Yeah?
Yeah. I played forwards, backs, you name it.
Oh wow, okay.
Didn't matter because it wasn't about winning. It was just about having.
It is.
I mean, we tried. Don't get me wrong. And we lost a lot, but it was fun.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing for sport, especially as you're younger. I mean, growing up, definitely, but enjoying it.
Yeah, and what frustrates me now, I see schools offering a splitting year 12 for some students who are in the first 15 in rugby.
Okay.
And I won't mention any school's names, such as the King's School.
Yeah.
who give endowments to kids to then have a 13th year, if you
Ooh.
Like. And, you know, there's a big difference between a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old physically.
Yeah.
So these kids are given a free ride as long as they split year 12 into two so that they can play an extra year in the first 15. I mean, it's...
And then they just keep coming back but saying that they're 17 and they're like 21. And you're like, are you still in school?
But the problem,
what are you
doing? The problem is, what message does it send to the kids?
I mean,
I want my kids... Like, my philosophy is anybody can win, right? Anybody can win. It's how you behave when you lose.
Mm.
That's a critical piece. And so... I always said I wanted my kids to be taught how to lose and how to behave when you lose.
Yeah.
But we've got this win-at-all-cost mentality that comes through, and that really sort of irks me.
Oh, no one likes a sore loser. There's nothing more unattractive, I think, than watching someone, you know, kick up a stink or spit the dummy or it's just actually like it is. I feel like it's quite un-Australian as well. Like, I feel like in Australia we still have that pretty like – good camaraderie, good competition. Like, you just don't really.
Yeah, but
do
then you
that.
Also you also don't want them to be a total utter wankers when they win too.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, you know, yeah. There's a balance.
There's got to be some humility has got to come in.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you, I'm a motor racing fan. I've always been a Formula One fan, but recently I've rediscovered MotoGP.
Okay.
And
what's the difference?
MotoGP is motorbikes.
Oh.
Formula One, four wheels.
Yep.
MotoGP, two.
Nice.
So MotoGP is the pinnacle of motorbike racing.
Right.
And what's amazing with these guys is how they are genuinely pleased for their competitors when they win.
Right.
And the love that they furnish them, because these guys are on the edge of death.
Yeah.
Mm.
What they're doing is so dangerous. I think it's far more dangerous than something like Formula One, and Formula One is dangerous. And yet the respect they have for one another and the fighting and the dueling they have is fascinating. I mean, physically terrifying.
Yeah, those sweaty leather suits.
And when they they finish, and so there's an Italian guy just won the world championships on the weekend, a guy called Pecco Bagnaia, and to see all the other riders crowd around him.
Oh, that's quite special.
Oh, it was. It was phenomenal.
Mm.
You know, it made you want to weep.
Yeah.
Because the joy that they had for him.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's, you know, how to win with humility, but also how to lose graciously.
Yeah.
Is something we need to see more.
Mm, definitely. I mean, they don't teach that at school, really, do they?
Not really.
No,
I don't think so. I don't know.
PDHPE wasn't really doing that, were they?
Not when they're giving scholarships to them.
No, exactly.
That's blown my mind.
It's very, Not sure.
It's wrong.
All right. So, what?
How's that for a positive note?
Yeah, I love it.
And that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
What sort of sports? What got you into sport? Because obviously, sport, and we're going to get into it soon, is your life, more the business side. But what got you into sport? What did you love growing up?
Look,
aside from cricket and rugby?
Dreadful to say it, but I'm your typical middle-aged white male, right? And I grew up in private schools with cricket and rugby, and you know, was my early years were a reflection of that, and so it was literally just spectating. So when I was going through school, basketball was tiny. These days, basketball's exploded.
Yeah,
and so we were obviously under the influence of the British, and hence the cricket and rugby stuff.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
What's been amazing is to see how that's all been completely smashed apart now, and what the AFL has done in New South Wales and in Kilgoating, you know, like screaming into the schools and the community system here. And so the more sports we see and the more choices we have and the more kids have got options to get out and do it, it's just awesome. And that's what we want.
Yeah.
And so you obviously have a huge passion for sport. How did you move that into the business side? Of you started Skins, and if you're listening, you don't know what Skins is a sportswear, but maybe you can just explain what is compression sportswear, like what is Skins, like what is it actually doing?
Okay, well, you got to take a step back.
Go, you take.
You got to take a step back, because for 50, well, this is 20 years ago, for 50 years prior, they'd created a thing called engineered gradient compression.
Yeah.
So compression stockings, if you went and had a varicose vein operation or heart surgery or something like that, the hospital would put compression stockings on you. And what those stockings did is they forced venous return. They forced blood, because your blood flows down in your arteries and back in your veins. And the faster the blood can get back in the veins to your heart, the faster the heart then pumps them back in the arteries. And if you can enhance that, if you can increase that, that helps you as a recovering patient. And it wasn't me, it was actually the original founder of the concept of our business, a guy called Brad Duffy. he had this idea and he thought, you know, I can apply that concept. And instead of putting it on people who are sick, elderly and infirm, I can apply it to sport, and not just to ordinary sport, but to elite athletes. Mm-hmm. And if I can do that and I can pump more oxygen to their muscles, that'll have a performance benefit. That'll have a recovery improvement, which will give a performance benefit. And so he did that, and he launched it in early 2002. And it wasn't called Skins then. It was three different brands. And he launched it in April 2002, and by the end of the year, he was bust. And I came in literally just on as the receivers or the liquidators were about to be appointed, and I put the money in to save the business and then took it over and ran with it.
It's amazing. And Skins, is it still a functioning business now? Because you were there for nearly 17 years at the
helm. 17 years, yeah. Yep. Moved, I did a, and without boring you, I did a private equity deal in 07 that was disastrous and that killed the business.
Right.
And it killed the business because I had to buy them out in 2012, and I could only do that by taking on a huge amount of debt, which I did out of Japan. I transitioned the global operations to Switzerland back in 07. Mm-hmm. And by 2019, the business was bust. So I put it into bankruptcy in Switzerland. So went on this wild ride.
Yeah,
you know,
I can
created
imagine.
An awesome brand, created a great business,
yeah.
Grew globally, took it on this massive journey, which was terrific, and then watched it flush down the toilet for the last 4 years from sort of 2015 onwards, which was pretty depressing. And then came back here sort of mid-19, you know, moved back from Europe in mid-19 and thought, what am I going to do?
Wow.
You were living in Switzerland at the end there, weren't you? When
yeah, I lived in Switzerland from sort of 07 through to 2017, and then the last couple of years in London.
I'm a little obsessed with Switzerland. Whereabouts were you
it's
living?
It's bizarre. You know, I used to be obsessed too.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest place. I almost said fuck then. It's the weirdest place because for an Australian, because we are so different culturally.
Yeah.
I used to wear shorts to work, and because even in the middle of winter, because I'd go out of my heated house into my heated car, to my heated office, and then back to my heated car and back to my heated house, right? And I would have these people come and see me, and, you know, they would call me Herr Fuller and Mr. Fuller, and I'd say, how you going, mate? You know, and it was just this massive cultural clash. But the place is beautiful. Optically, it looks like it does on the photos. It's the only country I know that does. And it's just beautiful, but cultural clash is staggering.
Well, there you go. But where were you living in?
The company was in a town called Zug. Zug is the capital of commerce in Switzerland.
Okay.
Switzerland's got 26 cantons. All the cantons negotiate their own tax arrangements.
Hmm. Yeah, right.
With business, and so you get a canton like Zug, which is very aggressive on tax. So we were able to negotiate a great tax treatment to be based there. And I lived on a little lake called Lake Lauerzsee, which is well known in Switzerland for being the shallowest lake in Switzerland. There are, I don't know how many thousand, there are lots of lakes in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And so I lived on the sort of side of this little lake and worked in Switzerland.
Joel is just beaming right now. You have a serious obsession, I think.
I do. I've met most of Europe I'm obsessed with. Switzerland has, I love it.
Wait, have you been?
Twice.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
It's a weird place. I got to tell you, it's a weird place to live.
Okay.
It is. So I knew people that had been there for 25 years who would say to me that they still didn't feel like they were welcome there.
Oh, wow.
The Swiss attitude is, look, we welcome you to come and bring your money and create jobs, but we know that you're here to benefit from our infrastructure and our business and our tax structure. And we respect the fact that you're coming here, but at the end of the day, you're you, and we're us, and we're our culture.
Wow. All right, there you go. Now, back to when you became CEO of Skins, what were you doing before that? How do you go from seeing this company that's emerging and then almost completely falling apart? What were you doing to get in there and say, I'm going to take over and I'm going to make this?
I come from a family who multiple generations in printing,
right?
And in my last journey in printing, which started into 1997, I did really well for 5 years, like really well, and that got me into property development, and I did really well. but I hated it and I got no sense of satisfaction out of it. The money was great, don't get me wrong. Everybody likes to make money, but I got no sense of satisfaction. So I was always looking for something that would sort of appeal to me more on a personal level. And it was, funnily enough, it was through a guy called Graham Arnold. Graham is the manager of the Socceroos.
Yeah.
And a good buddy of mine knew Graham, and Graham had said Graham was involved with the previous incarnation of Skins. And he said, you should come and have a look at this. And so they got me in to look at acquiring the US distribution rights. And I thought I'd rather not have the US distribution rights on with the whole lot.
Wow. That's a pretty daunting and scary experience considering it wasn't doing that well, but you just had this feeling of like, I'm going to take this business and make it amazing.
I did two hours of due diligence.
Wow.
I literally had a meeting with the guy for 2 hours, walked out, sat in the car, and I rang him. And I rang him and said to him, look, let's cut the shit. You're evidently in trouble. And he said, yes. And I said, how much do you need? And he told me, I said, when do you need it? And he said, 6 days. So I said, all right, I'll cut you a check in 4. We'll meet and the lawyers will do the documentation.
Wow.
Did 3 numbers. I knew 3 numbers. What was it? The retail price, the wholesale price, and the cost price.
Yeah, right.
That was all. Those were the only numbers I knew, we discussed. But I knew because you could see the concept and it made a lot of sense to bring that technology and put it into it.
Yeah.
And to launch it and to show that it works and prove that it works and then create a brand and build a brand. It seemed like a no-brainer to me.
And so Skins, you know, that chapter sort of ends and you're obviously very interested in sports technology, sports science after this, you know, experience with Skins, which is a sport tech essentially company.
Well, we were really innovative 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. And what I realized at the end was whilst we were innovative 20 years ago, we lost that sense of innovation.
Mm.
And innovation for us became more about color changes.
Yeah, yep.
And maybe developing something that wasn't particularly innovative. You could call it innovation, but it wasn't.
Yep.
And I'd also seen the power of that elite relationship.
Yep.
And if you can have in our game, because we were selling product to elite, which you can't do. Right? Mm. You don't do it in sport. You've got to pay them to either to wear your product or pay them to be seen to be wearing your product.
Yeah, yeah.
But because we had something that they wanted and they needed, they bought from us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is really powerful. And then I was developing a little device for minimize ankle sprains.
Oh.
And I was introduced to a guy who was the principal scientist at New South Wales Institute of Sport. And we met up for a coffee and a chat. And it just so happened the week earlier, and he'd been there. He was NSWIS's employee number one. He was the first employee at New South Wales Institute of Sport in 1996 when they created NSWIS in preparation for the 2000 Olympics. And he'd been in sports science roles and then the principal scientist for 14 years, but total of 24 years. And the week before we were due to meet, he got made redundant. They brought in a new CEO, and new CEO said, right, we're going to do some cultural changes, and I'm just going to go and fire people for the sake of it.
So Elon Musk-y, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And so when he and I had coffee, he said to me, because we were just going to have a bit of a chat about what I was doing. And he said, I've got some really interesting stuff in my head that you'd be interested in. And that started this thinking about what if we could create a business that was purely focused on taking really innovative products and understanding how to help elite athletes and then taking them to market and not only helping elite athletes but giving people who are not just passionate about sport but really serious about competition. So we've got a product for swimmers and it's not for anybody that just goes and does 10 laps a day to keep fit but people who compete and people who race and people who want to and they could be swimmers or they could be triathletes. And suddenly when you look at it through that lens and you're not a compression company, you're not a shoe company, you're not an apparel company, when you sit there and say, we can be any type of product we like, any type of technology, we could be microfluidics, apparel, nutrition, miniaturization, wearables, we can be anything we want as long as we provide a benefit, a performance benefit to elite athletes. That then broadens your scope and broadens your horizon, and you can be very creative. Now, the secret here is to have someone like Kenneth Graham, our principal scientist, who has worked for 24 years at the height of Olympic sport in saying, how can I bring science to help you as a world champion, national champion, Olympic champion? How can I bring science to help you perform better? And so when you've got that and emerging technologies and his great massive brain and understanding in emerging research, suddenly you can visualize devices and products that help these guys. And that's what we do now.
Are you studying athletes now? Do you study athletes who are past their prime, I guess, or no longer athletes? Does that help as well? Or is it up and coming athletes? Do you look at everyone?
Look, Kenneth drives this site, and his philosophy, actually, he works in Olympic cycles, but he works one cycle ahead. So he's 5 years out. Right. So you'll come into Tokyo. Let's assume Tokyo was 2020, which we know it wasn't. It was 21. But in 2019, he'll be looking at Paris, which is 2024.
Yeah, right.
Right. And it's about – so I'll give you a really good example. There's a diver, you know, 10-meter platform diver, a guy called Matt Mitchum.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Matt won the gold medal, and I'm ashamed to say this. I think it was Beijing. Was it Beijing or London?
I think it was
– it's not that long ago. So.
I think it might – look, it might have been London. And what Kenneth did was Kenneth – and also his background is a mathematician. So he looked at the scores and he looked at the development of scores in the 10-meter platform over a series of cycles, over Olympic cycles, and could see that each cycle, the scores had to go up. So, you know, the gold medal in Sydney was, I don't know, 510. In Athens, it was 538.
Yeah.
In Beijing, it was 506. And he was able to plot for London where Matt, what score Matt had to do. And Matt couldn't do, because he was doing a 3.5, and it was physically impossible to get that score from a 3.5. So he was able to say to Matt, guess what, buddy, you've got to do a 4.5. And so they worked with Matt to be able to do a 4.5 somersault.
Wow.
Matt was able to train, practice, make it happen, and then execute perfectly on the day, won the gold medal. So it's about how you think ahead like that. And so Kenneth did that 5 years earlier, and was able to show him the progression of the sport and the mathematics of it and where they had to go. So that's just sort of one little example of how you can then plot forward where you need to be and what you need to achieve.
Mm.
And then it's a matter of, that's what I've got to achieve, that's what I've got to get to.
Mm.
How do I get there? There's destination. How do I get to that destination? And that's where science and technology can come in and help.
And this is EO Lab that we're talking about. So this is the new business and the new venture.
So we very quickly sat down and said, you know, hey, we've got – because instead of just being one ankle device that can that can develop into a range of shoulder and knee and wrist and thumb and all that stuff, we said, oh, now we need to be more aggressive and we can broaden this out. And I went back to London back in 2020 and I got stuck over there. This was sort of COVID crazy time.
Mm.
And I got stuck over there, and my creative and strategy partner are based over there. And so I was really fortunate in May we kicked off the brand creation and brand site. And most people don't know that brand building, they think brand building is you create a logo and a name and you stick it on a device or a product and you put it on a shelf and that's how you build a brand. Mm. It's not. When you build a brand, your brand's almost become this organic thing, a living thing, if you like. And when you build a brand, what you ideally want to do is you want to define what it stands for. You want to create, you want to define its personality and articulate what its DNA is. And we were so fortunate. We spent 4 or 5 months doing that before we even said, what are we going to call it? And in doing that, the first thing we did was, what do we stand for? And we were able to define and then articulate it as accelerating human progress through sport. All right, so it's not accelerating human progress in sport, it's accelerating human progress through sport, which gives you permission to not only work on what's going on the pitch, on the field, on the court, in the pool, but also what's going on off it and the impact that sport has outside of performance. Because sport in that construct has become so much broader.
Mm.
Yeah, you can see today the power of athletes' voices and what it's doing. You know? And when we came up with that, we then said, okay, now we need to think about what we're going to call this. And it was my creative director in London who did his research and came up and said that EO is Latin for progress. And so when you're accelerating human progress through sport, and when you look at these devices, which are all built to give you progress, how do I get better? Yeah. How do I progress? and how can we progress society through sport? How can we use sport as the lens that can help eradicate homophobia, not just from sport, but from society in general? Then the word progress and EO became perfect. And, you know, two-letter word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Available, trademarked, yeah. Away we go.
Done. It's very exciting. So you've got a few products already that have launched, is that correct?
Yeah, we've got five products in the go.
Wow.
We've got one that's launched, one that's going through TGA, FDA in the US approval, and TGA here,
yep.
Which is an electroencephalogram, a portable EEG to diagnose concussion.
Yes.
So it reads your brain waves.
Yeah.
Fabulous thing. We don't.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah, we didn't develop this. This has been developed by a doc here in Sydney.
Yep.
A brilliant guy called Dr. Adrian Cohen.
Cool.
And it does. It works on the principle that a concussed brain responds differently to a non-concussed brain to a certain evocation of light. So you flash lights in your eyes, and then you measure
and
at the base
put
of the visual cortex.
On.
Yeah, it takes less than 2 minutes.
Wow.
It looks like a virtual reality headset.
Yep.
And you can measure how your brain is responding to those lights.
Wow.
And if your brain responds a certain way, it's highly likely you're concussed.
So this is in terms of, like, say this is happening on the field, rugby match, someone's concussed, or they think they put this on, see if they're concussed.
2 minutes.
You sit out, you're concussed.
And it's not only that. It's not absolute 100% guaranteed, but it's an aid for a clinician to be able to diagnose.
Totally.
So
yeah.
A doctor can then look at the results and say, yeah, I think you are concussed or I think you're not. It's not only that, but it's also for return to play. And one of the most critical pieces is recovery of brain health.
Yeah.
So if you are concussed, to be able to measure. And, you know, some sports have implemented a 13-day stand down or a 15-day stand down. Mm. So it's just, regardless, that's how long you're off and you can't go back and have an impact. The reality is we're all different. Some of us will recover in 6 days.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of us will recover in 3 months.
Yeah.
And so to put in place a cookie-cutter solution, we don't think is good enough. So if you've got this device, as long as the player has got access to it, they can get a regular checkup and you can monitor the recovery of the brain health.
Wow, that's pretty exciting considering the sort of research that's coming out around concussions and the impact on long-term health.
There's a lot of snake oil out there, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of bullshit going on. And if you can come back to, and one of the key challenges in this space is that the players lie. So we have our chief medical.
Well, they have a lot riding on it, right? You know, like.
Well, it's not just a lot riding on it. It's, I want to play.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Totally.
I want to get out there.
That's it.
Okay, I've had a knock. I'm all right. I'll be fine. You know, I stagger around a little bit, but, you know, I'll be okay. She'll be right, man.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them need protection from themselves. So the vast majority of the systems that are in place today, they can bullshit.
Yeah.
And they can lie. With this device, they can't. There's nothing they can do that changes how their brain's responding to those lights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so this is the most objective way of being able to say, yeah, you're recovered or you're not.
Very futuristic. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Joel, continue.
Sorry, no, I was going to say, we are almost completely out of time. I can't believe how fast that went. I've just been sitting here going, oh, this is so interesting.
We haven't even touched on some of the advocacy, your work and campaigns that you've done.
I didn't even get to talk about my swim device, which is going to...
The swim device.
It's going to rock the swimming world.
Well, I mean, you're giving this teaser taster, which is exciting because I'm sure we can get you back on for sure. But yeah, you've got too much to talk about, Jamie. I know. It's too exciting. Yeah,
but we do have to finish with a game. We always finish this show with a game. So it's going to go a little something like this. Jamie, are you a fan of rugby league at all?
Sure am.
Okay, great. Then you might know the answer to this question.
Uh-oh.
Hang on, I'm not very knowledgeable.
Who are the remaining four teams in the Men's Rugby League World Cup?
Oh, shit.
New Zealand?
Yeah.
New Zealand is one.
New Zealand, Australia.
Two.
I'm going to go Tonga.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Oh, is it Samoa?
Samoa.
Okay.
And England?
And the host nation is England.
Yes!
Very good. Jamie, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
On. Again,
my pleasure, guys.
Please, can we get you on again? Because there's so much. We have a million more questions.
A million.
Not even close to what we wanted to ask. Thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Oh, Thanks, Joel. Eolab.com. Eolab.com. Eolab.com.
And we're going to put a link up on our site.
Yeah,
as well.
We'll put a link up. You can read more. We'll definitely be getting Jamie back on. Thank you so much for coming in to SER. Very exciting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Hello, podcast listeners. We're still here with Jamie. We had so many questions, we had to just keep going.
We
so
do.
We're going to just ask a couple more things and you get to listen. So enjoy.
So, Jamie, Eolab is a very exciting science and technology sports innovation company. You have got a new product out. Please give us the details.
Okay, this is a swim device, and it's a very small little device that sits in the middle of each hand, and each of them weighs less than a slice of bread.
Oh.
The purpose of this device is to do a number of things, but the primary thing is to measure forces that are generated by the hand as it passes through the water.
Ah.
And so obviously when you're swimming, your velocity is a function of how much force you're generating in the right direction. So there's six directions. You can generate force up, down, left, right, forward, back. And we're able to measure that force, and not only measure it in whole, we can then break it up into those six vectors. And so we can show you stroke by stroke, lap by lap, session by session, how much force you're generating as your hand goes through the water. And you can then refine your technique to be able to push more force forward back so that it's propelling you. Because you don't want force back to forward, which
yes.
is drag.
Yes.
Right? You don't want drag.
Science lesson. I'm getting it.
Right. You also want to minimize the amount of force that you're moving laterally, left and right.
Yep.
So as your hand goes through the water, you want it to be pushing towards your feet as much as possible. So if you have a sweep where your hand
yeah.
goes sideways.
See, I do that. I do a bit of a sweep.
Then you're missing propulsive force. Likewise, you want your force to go down.
Yep.
Which pushes you up, which makes you more buoyant, which enables you to move faster through the water.
Mm.
And you don't want much force pushing you up, which pushes you down into the water and reduces your buoyancy. So we're able to do that and break it into those six vectors. And then, like I say, you can look at every single stroke individually and you can monitor how that's moving. We're also able to map your hand path, and we can show you three versions. Side on, top down, front on. And so we can show you the path that your hand's moving.
Oh.
So from side on, you can see it coming down under and then the recovery phase as
right.
it goes back in the air and comes back in the water. And if you imagine a helicopter view,
yep.
so if you're looking at a helicopter view, you can see if it's going straight back or if you're moving laterally. And likewise, if you imagine it coming towards you, a swimmer coming towards you, you can see the path that your hand moves. Like that.
And you can do it for every stroke?
Every single stroke. So we're focusing on freestyle.
Yep.
But we will be able to make it available for breaststroke, backstroke and butterfly as well.
Wow.
But right now it's all about freestyle.
Yeah. And does it come with a scientist as well that can help you analyze the data?
Look,
and
this is a really fascinating piece, I think. Eventually, because what we need is we need a lot of data. Then we can plug it into machine learning.
Mm.
Once we can do that, then we can find patterns. We can find correlations between problems in technique and data. And eventually what this device will do, it'll be a coach, not for elite, but for the lower level swimmer. Let's call it a triathlete, because triathletes traditionally, their worst leg is their swim.
Yeah.
It's the one that they focus on least. And so eventually what we'll be able to do is we'll be able for the software to be able to say, hey, it looks to us, we're noticing in the glide phase. So when you start your stroke, your hand goes in for the glide and then you do your pull and then it recovers.
Yep.
And sometimes people, when their hand goes in for the glide, their fingers turn up. And if your fingers turn up and you're pushing like that, that's drag. And so what this system will eventually be able to do will be to pick that sort of stuff up and say, hey, we can see in your glide phase that your fingers are turning up and you're creating drag, which is slowing you down. Concentrate on keeping your fingers pointing downwards through the glide phase to minimize that drag. So the capacity for this device to not only help someone like Kyle Chalmers, and Kyle is our ambassador, our swim ambassador, and he lost the gold medal in Tokyo in the 100 metres free by six hundredths of a second.
Wow.
Now, if he'd had access to this, he would have been able to pick up that 600ths of a second, no doubt in my mind. So not only will it help the elite people who work with coaches and who work with biomechs, who are able to take that data and analyse it and work on those patterns and those correlations, but it'll also help people who, and there are a lot of people, maybe not so much in Australia, but in the United States, there's 288,000 people over the age of 12 who race competitively in swimming.
Wow.
And that's not triathletes, that's just swimmers, clubs, masters, college.
Yeah, right.
So they'll be able to use it, as will triathletes. So, yeah, it's really, really cool tech.
It's very cool. What about your feet? What's going on with your feet? Well, yeah, who's measuring the feet?
Yeah,
are they important?
Look, funnily enough, the way it works is 60% of your propulsion comes from your hand.
Oh, okay.
20% comes from your forearm and 20% comes from your feet.
Right.
Yeah, and so the hand is the primary piece of your body that propels you through the water.
There you go. I didn't know that. I always thought it was your feet.
I would have thought before I got into this 50% of your propulsion would come from your feet.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, because when I do laps, I wear little flippers, and if I don't wear the flippers, I really notice it. So I'm always just thinking, yeah, I always thought it was my feet that was doing a lot of the work.
The purpose of those flippers, what, cheating, are they, Gabby?
Yeah. Corruption at its core. Yeah, I mean, it is really, essentially. I get tired if I don't have my flippies.
See, when I do laps, I wear, but you're saying this now and I'm like, obviously, so I'll do some laps.
Do the paddles?
And then I'll put paddles on and I'll use a pool boy.
What's he up to? What's he doing for you?
He just holds my legs for me to stop myself from kicking. And definitely I'm maybe going slightly faster than I would if I didn't have my pedals. I've got pedals. I've got a bike in there.
What are paddles? What are you talking about?
So they're like...
Are they like plastic?
Yeah.
They're not the like gloves with the webbing.
No, it's like a big... How do you...
It's if you imagine a glove that you put on that's got a piece that covers your fingers.
Okay. Yeah.
And it literally, it gives you more surface area.
Right.
So as your hand goes through, you're getting more water.
Is it a training device or is it more just to go faster?
No, it's training.
Oh, training.
Oh, yeah. But seriously over here, Joel, with your pool boy and your little...
But the difference is with our product, it's called the EO Swim Better. It doesn't go over your fingers. And the problem for a swimmer is if you put those paddles on, it covers your fingers and you lose the sensation of the water going through your fingers. So when we developed it, we wanted to be as unobtrusive as possible. And so it sits in the middle of the hand. It's a really small, lightweight device. And it does. It's got a pressure sensor. And the technology in it is fascinating. It's got two pressure sensors because the force you measure, as your hand goes lower in the water, you get force increases from the water from the depth. So it's got two pressure sensors, and one of them is to compensate, to measure the depth, and it compensates in the algorithm for the natural pressure increase that comes from the depth of the hand in the water.
Would you need to know how much water is in the pool and all that sort of stuff?
No, that
doesn't come into it.
No, what we do is we measure the width of your hand and the length of your forearm.
Okay.
And so which isn't necessary until you get into wanting to measure exact Newton seconds, right? If you want to measure those forces, you want to ideally understand the square area of your hand and the length of, because this is your arm is your lever, and so you want to measure the length of your forearm to understand that. But for 99% of people, I mean, that's what the biomechs want, because they want to then break it down into those Newton seconds. Whereas it is just, and this thing is going to absolutely blow the swimming world out of the water.
So if an elite swimmer is listening, like, can they get their hands on these?
Yeah, so we have a partnership with Swimming Australia.
Yep.
And a development partnership, because they love what this is, because the data this provides. Because, you know, up until now, all that coaches have got is their gut and stopwatch. That's it.
Do they put GoPros in the pool? Have a little watch?
Yeah,
how are they doing it?
But even then,
you're not really.
A GoPro, you can film stuff and you can see stuff, but then you've got to interpret.
Totally. Yeah.
Now they're going to have access to this data, which is actual data.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Different in my day, Jamie. The coach would just walk alongside the pool and yell at you.
Yes, I remember. Yeah,
that's all it was.
Hurry up!
Yeah.
I'll tell you something really funny. So we went up to Queensland and we demoed it to, I won't mention the name, but this chap is Australia's most successful coach. And he had a team of people training, and he had four people whose job was just to do stroke count. Right. So literally they would sit there with a clipboard.
Oh, no.
And they would count. They'd do time it over 3 seconds or count three strokes, and they'd time them and they'd enter them. And they'd use that to calculate the stroke rate.
Mm.
Now, we capture that. We capture strike rate. And it's the most boring thing.
That was just saying, that is my worst idea of a job. I'd be so bad at it as well. I'd be off with the fairies, chatting to people over here. Shit.
Well, let me tell you, he was blown away by the fact that we can capture strike rate. And he's going, oh, my God.
Well, four people just lost their jobs. So.
No, it just means four people can do something that's far more meaningful.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, yeah, it's because we are talking about a sport that's been left behind when it comes to technology and innovation. And as Ken has said to me, what we're doing has been done in rowing, and it was done in rowing 20 years ago. But the difference is 20 years ago, they were able to put a 1 or 2 kilo box in a boat that was the computer that was able to take the data and crunch it and do that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, with technology evolving the way it has, it's minimized to the point where we can have such these lightweight things and have the data being able to transfer through Bluetooth and then go to the cloud, process in the cloud, and then come back and present.
I mean, the future is here, really, essentially. It is. It's amazing.
Well, so you've said you're going to do all the other three strokes.
Yeah.
But are there plans for other sports?
No, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We've got lots of... So, for example, this technology can be applied to rowing.
Yeah.
And to paddle sports as well, where we take the same concept.
Surfing?
And you put it... Yeah. Funnily enough, the AIS, Australian Institute of Sport, contacted us about doing something with Surfing Australia.
Yeah, cool.
Because... And when you... And I... Because I'm not a surfer. I don't understand it.
Love it.
But with surfing, what is absolutely critical is being the first person out there to get the wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
In competing terms.
Yeah.
And so... Paddling becomes absolutely critical. So if you want to work with, and this is like, you know, the Kenneth Graham view, if you want to improve your scores in surfing, not only do you do the physical stuff, standing on the board and how you balance and all that sort of
cutbacks,
shit, but how do you get out there and how do you beat your fellow competitors to get out to be the first there to get the wave, to have the right of the first right to the wave.
Totally.
And hence something like this is awesome for that too.
Very exciting. Wow.
Yeah. The future, as you said,
is here.
Well, again, thank you, Jamie.
Thank you so much, Jamie. And eolab.com is where you can explore all of these products and learn a bit more about the future of sport. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joel.